Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shift podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome.
All right, well, welcome to the show, Alyssa.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
Me too. So just curious, would you be okay sharing with the audience here, anybody who's listening, more about who you were before your eating disorder?
Yeah. So before my eating disorder started, I was probably in middle school, high school. So I was very involved in sports. I played basketball, soccer. I did dance, very involved in school, had pretty good grades. Definitely was a perfectionist for most of my life. Still am, for sure. So always had to have the perfect grades. But I was very involved with my friends, going to extracurricular activities, hanging out with my friends, doing sports. And once my eating disorder started to really ramp up, a lot of that started to change.
So was there a particular time trigger or situation, anything you can identify where you noticed that you went from that kind of lifestyle and situation to food or body or weight or something kind of becoming more on your mind?
Yeah, there was definitely a bunch of different aspects of my life that led up to me kind of falling into the habits of an eating disorder. When I was really young, about kindergarten age, my dad got really, really sick. And so my brother, my mom, and I all kind of coped with food around that, where I kind of coped with overeating. And my brother went the opposite way and coped with not eating anything because he was older and more aware. So he was scared. And the dynamic of food in my household was pretty rough for a couple of years. And as things got better, my dad got better, you know, the household kind of mellowed out. But being a young girl in dance class when I was maybe 6 or 7, I was the tallest girl in my class for years on end, taller than all the boys in the school, taller than all the girls. And so in dance class, they would put me in the middle of like the triangle thing. And I thought that being the tallest meant that I was the biggest, because I would constantly hear things like, oh, you're so big, or you're getting so big, you're the biggest girl. And so to me, tall and big was just went hand in hand. And I remember, you know, you have to wear leotards and tights to dance. And I stopped doing that as a young age. I started wearing sweatpants and shorts because I just wasn't comfortable with the tightness of the clothing, because I thought that that made me stand out more. And then when I got to middle school, high school, is when I started to be really involved in sports. And I had a very, very athletic age group. Everyone was doing sports. Everyone was really good at sports. So again, me thinking I'm the biggest, I also attributed that to being the worst at sports. Hmm. A lot of my friends were on varsity, where I maybe wasn't or wasn't getting as much time on varsity. So I really pushed myself before school, after school, to work out, to improve myself. And it just never really felt like enough. I was still not getting the same, you know, playing time as all the other girls. There was one incident where one of my coaches said, you know, if you run a 7:30 mile, then you'll be put on varsity. And I got my mile down very low. And he still didn't put me there because he still said I wasn't good enough. So all of those things, yeah. So all of these messages kind of just balled into one until I got to high school, and things just kept getting worse.
So that really played into what you were saying before about being a perfectionist. And so hearing you're not good enough, I'm sure just was horrible for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so did that just push you to try harder and harder and harder?
It did. Yeah. I was waking up before school at like 5 o'clock in the morning and working out in my basement. And then I would go to soccer practice or basketball practice, whatever the sport was that season. And I also had a membership at the gym. So there were some practices where I felt like, oh, we didn't really work out enough. So I would justify that and then continue to work out after school. I was also really cutting food groups and the amount of food that I ate, thinking that that would help. So obviously that didn't. Food is good energy. So I was really tired all the time. But I thought that, oh, this is working. I am running faster, or, you know, changes on my body are happening. And it came to an extreme where I ended up losing my period from over exercising and not eating enough.
Now, were you at that time just thinking this is for sports performance and to get on the teams and get playing time? Or were you actually thinking this is helping me in other ways? What was the mindset? Do you remember?
I think at the beginning, I don't know if either my brain tricked me to think, oh, this is just for sports, or if, you know, I think at the beginning it really was, this is for sports, we're doing this to be better. And at the time, nobody really noticed what was going on, because I also was a heavier set child. So, you know, when a bigger person loses weight, no one really notices. So everyone thought, oh, you're so healthy, you look so good. They were saying, what's your secret? And of course, I literally like absorbed myself in it. I loved the attention, which ironically, because I don't like being the center of attention, but all of these good messages, quote unquote, good messages of weight loss and things were coming in, and I was loving every minute of it. So it just pushed me to, you know, do more and more and more. But then eventually, you know, that lifestyle just caught up to me. I started to become really depressed. I then started to binge eat because I wasn't eating really anything. So my body flipped the switch and we started to binge eat, which that's when it kind of clicked in my head, like, okay, something's not right. I never thought at the beginning that the restriction and the overexercising was the problem. It's when I started to binge eat is when I thought I had a problem.
And so I'm wondering too, when you started to do that, was that when you, like, I hear this from a lot of people, and I also went through this myself, like thinking that's when you're the failure, that's when you're not trying hard enough, that's when you're screwing it up, right? Is that kind of what happened for you?
Yes, absolutely. Because, you know, I was putting back some weight on, muchly needed weight, but in my mind, oh my God, I lost all this weight, now I'm getting it back. Everyone's going to notice. They're going to think I failed. I think I failed because I just, in my head, I was like, I just can't stop. It felt like no matter what I did, I couldn't stop binge eating. And then it just kept spiraling out of control, where then I started to compensate with purging, because there was nothing that I felt so out of control that purging made it feel in control, even though obviously I wasn't.
Then did you ever see your overexercising as a form of purging, or did you like get to that point where that was like, okay, I'm overexercising, that's purging, or did you just see like vomiting as purging? Like, where was your mind at with that?
In the early stages, I never really thought that my overexercising was a problem until I went to treatment and they educated me and informed me everything. But in the midst of it, no, I thought I was doing a normal amount of exercise, which I wasn't. It was like multiple hours a day. Waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning is to then go to high school, to then go to soccer, to then work out again is not a normal amount. So at the time, no, I thought it was just something we all did, but obviously not.
And was anyone like tapping into any of this, all the exercise you were doing, or were you pretty good at hiding it?
Nobody knew that I was waking up in the morning. I was pretty quiet about it. And I would go to my basement. So, you know, my family lives on the second floor, then I would go all the way to the basement. So nobody could hear me. And then I'd go to soccer practice and, you know, I would use the excuse, oh, it was a really light day, I didn't do that much. So then to work out again was like, oh, well, she's just working out again, it's fine. So I was really good at hiding it.
And do you remember, like, if you didn't work out, or was that not even allowed? Like, if you had a day where you didn't, do you know how you, do you remember how you would feel?
Yeah. For a while that wasn't allowed. I would walk to the gym after school. It wasn't that far of a walk, but it was to get to the gym to then work out more. But if I missed a day, I would be super hard on myself. I would try to correct that with the type of food that I would eat. or even if I thought I had a lazy workout, I would get really hard on myself, which is like, well, it's okay. It's okay if you had a quote unquote lazy workout or if you miss a workout, but in my brain, that was the end of the world.
Were you, you know, you said you were kind of a perfectionist. So I'm wondering, did you have like a certain amount of minutes you had to work out or had to hit a certain, like, I know the machines have like counters for like calories and things. Were you like obsessed with that, like hitting a certain like number, or was it just like you had to just work out and it didn't matter?
I was very obsessed with time and the calories. I had a Fitbit and I would use the, like the treadmill has the calorie count. So I would use both to see how they compared to each other. And I made myself hit a certain amount of calories on the treadmill or the elliptical before I could get off that. And then I would go to the next thing, which would be lifting weights, which obviously lifting weights doesn't have a calorie thing on, you know, a weight. So I would check my Fitbit. And I also made sure that my heart rate was at a certain number. Like if it was below a certain number, I felt I wasn't working out hard enough.
So you were really in it, and it was just this obsessiveness with the numbers, which is so common, right? So for anybody out there listening, right, if that's kind of the compulsion, right, and you failed, right, if you didn't hit those numbers or whatever, you know. And I'm wondering too, where did you get those numbers? Do you remember even understanding like where you made those criteria for yourself?
No, I think I just one day made it up. Like the number with the heart rate, at least, the Fitbit tells you about the range of your heart rate. So I had to be in that certain one that I thought was good enough. And with the calories on the treadmill, I would just, I don't know, there was a certain number that I won't say, but there was a certain number that just felt if I didn't hit it, it wasn't enough.
And so curious now, like, as you think back to that, like, what would you tell like yourself, your younger self who was doing all of that? Would you tell her anything in particular?
Yeah. I would say for the longest time, all of that obsession made me hate working out. And that's something that I'm still healing with right now. Mm-hmm. So the fact that I pushed it so hard, you know, kind of ruined it for me. And working out isn't anything about a smaller waist size or pant size or the size on the scale. It's about, you know, celebrating what your body can do for you and, you know, moving it in ways that it can be moved, or, you know, maybe it can't do certain things and that's okay, but it can do this. It's just all about celebrating yourself. And I clearly was using it as a form of punishment.
That is such a great thing to say, right? It's like celebrating what your body can do. And absolutely, it sounds like you were just torturing yourself.
Yes, I was.
And so at what point did you get to treatment?
The first time I went to treatment, I was a sophomore or junior in high school. I can't exactly remember which year. I was in a adolescent program. I wasn't quite 18 yet. I went to Walden Behavioral Health, in case anybody has heard of it. And I went, when I first started going there, I wasn't purging yet. I was just binging a lot, still restricting, over-exercising. And at that point, my parents were like cued into what was happening. I was very depressed, not happy. So I would go after school 3 times a week, from I think like 4 to 7 or something. I had to eat dinner there, did a lot of work there, which was extremely weird to me because, you know, I was so used to eating dinner at my home. But I also wasn't necessarily ready to be in treatment yet. So a lot of the things that they said to me, I would be like, yeah, great. And I was a very active participant out of being a perfectionist probably, but then I would go home and not do anything that they told me to do.
Do you remember why you were not doing anything that they told you to do?
I definitely wasn't ready to give up my eating disorder, even though it was causing me tremendous pain. I still thought that, well, if I just do this, if I just stop binging, I can get back to where I was, you know, a year or two before. Like, I can do it. I don't need the help. There's really nothing wrong with me. My parents just have me here. So I was very, very mad to be in treatment.
Did you find, like, I don't know if you talked to other people in the programs, did you find that was pretty common, or did you not talk to anybody else?
I'm not sure if it was common. I mean, I'm sure it was. There was only like two or three of us in this small group. And at the time when I first got there, I was like, well, I don't really want to make any friends with these people. They already are kind of friends with each other because they've been here for a while. So I'm now the odd one out. I just, you know, don't want it. And eventually I started to make some friends with them, but we didn't really talk about eating disorders all that much together. It was just like, oh, how's school? And I think trying to keep some type of normalcy since we were pretty young.
I think I find that a lot. People are very resistant or in denial, like, oh, I don't really have this, or I don't really need to do the treatment. And I think that's pretty typical right when you're starting. So I'm wondering if there was some transition at some point where you're like, okay, maybe I need treatment, or maybe I don't want my eating disorder anymore. Just wondering how you went from like, nope, to okay, maybe.
It was a very long battle. I think one of the main things that kind of kicked me was I had to go to treatment again my senior year, but this time I was at inpatient, so I had to leave school for a couple months, which also meant I missed my senior trip, which thinking back on it was like, oh, it's really not that big of a deal for your mental health to skip your trip. Is really not that big of a deal, but to me it was like the end of the world. All my classmates are gonna know I'm gone. I, you know, it's embarrassing. So when I was in treatment every single day from 8 to 4, it was like, okay, there's something going on here. And I was still 17 at the time, but I actually got put in the adult program because I was already in the adolescent program and felt that I really couldn't connect with the younger kids because there were some pretty young kids in the adolescent program. As horrible as it was, you know, me being 16 and then there being like as young as 10-year-olds in that program, it was really hard to connect. So they put me in the adolescent group, which was also kind of hard because being a 17-year-old trying to connect with 30-year-olds was tough. But I met some people who were around 20, 22 to kind of like help me out and guide my way through. But yeah, definitely going to treatment the second time. They had to check every time I went to the bathroom. I had to do body checks every week or every day because I was self-harming. You had to do private weigh-ins where you couldn't see, but the doctors could. Definitely that was kind of when I was like, okay, there's something going on here.
Wow. So even getting to that point of being admitted to a higher level of care, you didn't really realize like how severe it was.
Yeah. And even being there and then doing all of that work, I still wasn't really ready to let go. I was doing the work and I was really like, yeah, I really want to get better, but I also was still holding on as tightly as I could to the eating disorder.
Do you remember what you were afraid of, or was there a fear of letting go of it? Remember what the purpose was for you at that point?
I think at that point it was, I was comfortable there. I was afraid of, well, what's going to happen when I don't have this eating disorder anymore? What's going to happen when I don't, quote unquote, control food, exercise, you know, whatever it was I was doing at the time. I was afraid that not having my eating disorder would make me gain weight, or, you know, I was just so afraid that not having it would be worse, which obviously now I know having it is way worse than being out of it, but it just seemed so scary to let go.
You said something really important there, which is you're afraid to not be in control.
Yeah.
And that's such an interesting feeling, right? Like you feel so in control. And yeah. I'm wondering, like, do you remember a moment where you realized like, oh, wait, I'm actually not in control with having this eating disorder?
Yeah. I think that feeling didn't come until college. I went away to college. I was only 30 minutes away from my house, but I still lived there. And I was really trying hard to be different, not different personality wise, but not let my eating disorder control me. And when I couldn't stop binging every single night, I finally clicked in my head like, oh, I really have no control over this eating disorder. This eating disorder has been controlling my life for years on end. And yet this feels like a safe space. And it was just a very confusing time to figure out, like, okay, so I thought I had control, but I don't. So how do I gain control to let go of my eating disorder?
So interesting. So you went to the higher level of care and then you were discharged. Obviously you were better. Yep. And yep. Then were you better for some time and then things got worse in college, or what happened there after you got discharged?
Yeah. So when I got discharged, I was still a senior in high school. Things were better. I was seeing a therapist who I still see today. Actually, I've been with her since a senior in high school, and now I'm graduated from college a year out. So I've been with her for a little bit now. But when I first got out of treatment, they put me on meds that really stabilized my mood. I was very actively suicidal in my high school years. Mm-hmm. So those meds really helped that kind of level out a little bit. When I left treatment, I was no longer purging. They put me on a meal plan to kind of stabilize my food. I wasn't in control of that. Actually, my parents had the meal plan. My parents were very heavily involved in treatment. So when I left, I was doing pretty good. The summer came. I was excited for college. Everything was good. And then I moved to college and I started to crash again.
Oh, so I'm wondering for you, because I think that's very typical. People go to college and they're very excited, right? And obviously yeah. You worked really hard to get in, which is great. And yeah. They're not really expecting the relapse or for things to get worse. And so was that experience for you, was it really hard to open up and ask for help again? Or did you ask for help? Like, what did you do at that point?
For a while, I didn't even realize I was struggling again. And part of that, I attributed to, oh, well, I have to eat in the dining hall. And I mean, the dining hall food, everyone says it, it's not great. Right. And so I would be just eating like mashed potatoes or something, because in my mind, I was like, well, there's nothing here to eat anyway. So I already wasn't eating enough at the dining hall, which then attributed to binging. Or, you know, I would go out with my friends, then I'd come home and I'd be really hungry, so then I'd binge some more. And it was a really difficult time navigating, making new friends. And, you know, then there was a point where my best friend, who I made there, was my roommate. She ended up leaving because it just didn't work for her. So I had a room to myself, which sounds ideal, but I actually loved being her roommate. So when she left, I was kind of sad. And the friends that I thought were my friends kind of fizzled. So I felt very alone for a very long time. And making new friends was very scary. Mm-hmm. So I kind of was just alone. My boyfriend went to a different college, so I didn't see him as much. And I eventually made new friends, and it was a scary thing, but I still did not get help with my new behaviors until maybe I was a sophomore in college, because that's when my purging started to ramp up again. I was kind of lying to my therapist and my family, like, oh no, everything's great, I'm doing great, which I wasn't. And then I finally told them, like, yeah, I'm really struggling again. So I ended up seeing a counselor on the campus while still seeing my therapist. I wanted an extra support on the campus, since my therapist was 45 minutes away. I wanted something on the campus, and that actually really helped tremendously. I was able to do different work with the therapist on campus and the therapist who I've been seeing, and have that support system was really helpful.
I think that's actually something interesting, like lying to everybody, right? This eating disorder has a lot of secrecy, and you know, it's the one thing that actually allows you to get better and get help, is by being honest and open. And it's the one thing nobody does. It's like, lying. And so I'm wondering for you, like, looking back, do you remember like what was going on for you that you were like, nah, I'm just going to pretend everything's fine?
I think part of it was I was so heavy set on not being a burden. When my depression was really high in high school, I thought I was a burden to everybody. So when the behavior started to ramp up again, it was like, well, my parents paid and put me through treatment twice now. My boyfriend has watched me struggle. My friends have tried to help me. I don't want to be a failure to them. I don't want to be a burden to them. So I just kept it hidden. And then I realized, though, that was not the way to go. Obviously, my friends and family and boyfriend they all want to help me. And the only way they can help me is by telling them what's going on. And I soon realized when I don't tell my parents how I'm doing, they actually like assume the worst. So when I was keeping secrets from them, they were already thinking, oh, well, she's probably not doing well, but they wouldn't say anything because, you know, they kind of knew how I was. I was just going to lie to them. So once I actually told the truth, they were like, yeah, we figured. So I realized that, well, lying doesn't really do anything.
So was there some relief on your part when you finally opened up and you were honest?
Yes, definitely. There was some, I was scared at first, again, because I didn't want anyone to be upset or think I was a burden, which obviously nobody did. But then once I started to open up more, it was like a big weight off my shoulders, because at that point I was carrying all of the weight on my own, so I could kind of like have somebody else help me carry it for a little bit. And it definitely was a relief.
Now, did you end up at a higher level of care after you were in higher level of care in high school, or did you stay an outpatient?
I did not. Actually, the treatment that I went to as a senior was the last time I was in real treatment. I did see my therapist. I still see her. I saw a therapist at school, bumped up my therapist time twice a week at one point, but I never returned back to treatment. We questioned it for a while, and maybe I should have, thinking back on the time, but I just never went back.
Okay. So sounds like you were wise enough to reach out and seek help, which was great.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't do that. Like they're scared, like you were, you know, don't want to open up, don't want to divulge, like, oh my gosh, like I'm still doing this. But it sounds like for you, doing the outpatient work did help, and probably maybe because you had some higher level of care before, you at least had that.
You know? Yeah, I was able to kind of work backwards, not backwards, but remember all the tools that I had when I was in treatment. That both times I was able to pull out that binder, because when I left, they gave me a binder of all these helpful tools. So I was able to use that with both my therapists and kind of remember, okay, here's all the things you learned. Yes, we haven't been doing it, but that's okay. We can start doing it now.
And so for you, like, if you could just kind of give us a sense of, now you're out of college, you're graduating, congratulations.
Thank you.
Like, where are you at now with your eating disorder?
Yeah, so I still struggle, not as much as I used to. I struggle only with binging now. And sometimes I think to myself, oh man, like we still struggle after all these years, everything we've been through. But then I have to remind myself all the other things I've overcome. You know, I'm not self-harming anymore. I'm not restricting. I don't purge. I'm not suicidal. All of these things I have overcome. So yeah, I still struggle with binging from time to time, but you know, I'm working on it. I see a therapist and I have a recovery coach. So we're doing lots of work to, you know, get me out of this pattern of binging.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
And I think that's the key, is you're looking back saying, I'm not doing all of these other things and I've come so far. Because I think people don't really realize it is a long process, especially when you've been doing such really severe behaviors, and, you know, having depression is oftentimes very, you know, common. And so you're overcoming two major mental illnesses, depression and an eating disorder. So that's congratulations for you for really sticking it out. That's hard work.
It is very hard work. And, you know, I'm so much better than I have ever been. And there are sometimes there's some dark times where my depression will slip back in, but I just have to remember, you know, all the tools to get myself back out of that. So not to say like, oh yeah, I had depression and it's gone, because I don't think that's ever really going to happen. You know, my depression isn't as bad as it was, but sometimes it slips back in, but I know how to manage it now.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
And you know, you're such an inspiration. Like, I actually found you because, you know, through Instagram, you have this amazing Instagram account
and
inspiring lots of people through your journey. And I'm wondering, like, how did you start that?
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. I started that about a year ago, maybe. And I kept it anonymous. I didn't have my face on it. I didn't have my name on it. I was just posting some positive quotes or some things I struggled with here and there. And the thought at the beginning was, you know, I want to help other people while I am still recovering, going through my journey. And I know, yeah, I found other recovery accounts through my, I have a main Instagram, a personal Instagram. So I found other recovery accounts through them, through that. So I thought, well, maybe I'll make one. And it didn't really last. I think I had it for like 2 months and I was and I just didn't really use it. I think I picked it back up about 6 months ago, maybe. And I logged back in and I kind of looked at it and I decided like, you know what, I'm going to do it for me and to hopefully help other people. And it's been super helpful for me to be able to post things that I've overcome, but also challenges, and to get to interact with everyone from around the world. I've gotten people who have chatted me from like India, New Zealand. I'm from the US. So it's amazing to get in contact with so many people around the world and know you're not alone. Your eating disorder might be different, but you know, you're not alone in fighting and getting to recovery.
And that is amazing. And I think that's the most interesting part, is that this illness, you know, it touches so many people. And, you know, looking at your Instagram, it's obviously so inspiring and, you know, you've come so far. And, you know, that I'm so glad you're on this podcast, just, you know, for anyone listening too, just hearing your story. And I know so many people can relate to everything that you've been through and are still going through. And just in, you know, I think that's the thing, is through the stories, we can inspire each other and just give each other hope. Like, you can get better. So for anyone who's like maybe where you were years ago, or even where you're at now, or anyone who's fully recovered, you know, just going, yes, keep going, you know, like,
yes, you can do exactly. It. You know? Exactly. For so long, I thought, I'll never recover. This is just my life now. And that's it, you know, and I now realize, well, no, that's not true. Yeah, we struggled for a really, really long time, but I will get through this. I will get to full recovery someday. And it's really neat to be able to talk to people on the app through who maybe have been recovered for 20 years. Maybe they just been recovered for like 3 days, or they're actively struggling. It's really neat to be able to talk to everybody from all sorts of aspects.
Well, that's great that you actually connect with people and talk to them. So.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So if anyone is out there listening and does want to follow you or connect with you on Instagram, how can they find you?
Yes, I actually just changed my handle. So it's now Alyssa_recovers. And there's a picture of me. It's now, it used to be pretty anonymous, so it's not anymore. I do have a blog that I haven't posted on it in a while. It is in my Instagram bio, because searching it is very confusing. So there's a link in my Instagram bio.
Awesome. All right. Is there any last parting words before we end things today?
I just hope for anybody listening that if they are struggling, that you will get through this. And like I have on my Instagram bio, that my DMs are always open. So if anybody needs to chat or, you know, vent about anything, I will always answer.
Fantastic. Alyssa, thank you so much for being here. Such an inspiration.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been amazing.
It's been amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guest are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find one.